Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Party News, the show on the Nerd Party where we talk about the news. I'm Mike.
I'm Lance.
And today we're going to be talking about what little news there is, although there is some fairly big news which just dropped mere minutes ago, our time. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, I think the thing that everyone has kind of been, preoccupied with over the past few days is not news, but actual movies which have come out this week. Two in particular, I would say, on the good old streaming services. One in theaters as well. The first of those movies is Soul, the new Pixar movie. Now, this is one which was supposed to come out over the summer, and they pushed it back and then announced that it was going to come straight to Disney Plus. And it stars Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm.
As a jazz pianist and
music educator
who is about to get his big break when he, I guess, I mean, he doesn't really die. He just kind of goes into limbo.
He goes into limbo. Because we find out, you know, he didn't really die. It's like he's close to death, I should say.
Yeah. We follow him and another pre-soul, I don't know what I forget what they're called.
Yeah.
Who are on a journey to find his body, find himself, find everything, and he learns some lessons along the way, as you do in a Pixar movie,
and in good movies in general.
Yeah. So, what did you think about Soul?
I love Soul. You know, not just because it's Pixar knocking it out of the park yet again. It's like, I swear, their batting average is 1,000. And it's not just that, it was a good story. I think it had a good message. And, you know, it raises a lot of very interesting questions, about purpose. Purpose in the meaning of your life, whether to not, use your purpose as your life. Questions, what is living? What is life? All these big questions that you can put in these things. And they do it in a very creative way, as they always do. And they tell very emotional and thought-provoking type of stories all the time. And for me, also, this movie hit extra hard because I am somebody that taught middle school band in their career. So that opening, the opening 2 minutes, I felt that really, really hard. So the whole Mr. G, I forgot my saxophone. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. A student say to me, I forgot fill in the blank instrument. I've heard it from every person that has played whatever instrument. They have forgotten it. Somebody has forgotten it. And I've felt that when they're playing and they're trying to play and it does not sound super great because they're little kids just learning. And he's just kind of making those faces as he's conducting and shouting out instructions. I've lived that life. I know exactly what it feels like to be that guy in that moment. And then the spark that happens when you hear one of your students who is fully into it and really is and practices all the time, just really loves it. And you hear them go off and the goodness that it makes you feel. I felt that too. When his star pupil who also plays the trombone, I was just this is amazing. This is all my things here. I loved it. And special shout out to the movie because all of the slide positions, the animations on that were 100% correct. The slide positions matched the notes that they were playing. Same thing with the saxophone, same thing with the piano. It was just well done.
Yeah, I love that. And I was thinking about that as I was watching it. This has got to be accurate, right? I mean, it's got to be. And I love that. I think, everybody, whenever they see a movie which portrays their profession, there's always this sort of thinking of did they get it right? I mean, I kind of do a whole podcast on that with film projection and stuff. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's just something about it where when they do get it right, it's so rare that movies actually do get it right, whatever it is, that when they do, it's just like, good job. Thanks for taking that extra effort, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Especially, like, for me as a trombone player, because most of the time when I see trombone in media, like, people are holding it wrong, and the slide positions do not match the sounds that are coming out of the instrument, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's kind of played for a laugh. They play it for a laugh here, but it's with kids, so it's different. Yeah. But, like, they play it for a laugh with adults, and it's annoying. So, and at least they showcased, like, you know, trombone being awesome with his student, mm-hmm. who, like, really knows how to play. So it's just like, well done. Like, I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was really cool. That opening logo, right? Mm-hmm. Where they play the Disney, you know, theme song, you know, over they must have gotten just like a regular, like, junior high band to do
Here's what happened. This is what likely happened. They probably put that music in front of, like, a junior high band, a middle school band, uh-huh. and for the first time, and had them sight read it. And so, like, sight reading, for those that don't know, is like when you see a piece of music for the first time and just try to play it. Pros can do it, you know, well. I've had gigs where, like, I don't have the music beforehand, I just sight read. Mm-hmm. But, like, with little kids who are just know how to play, it's an utter disaster. And you're lucky for the most part, if you get things like, you know, to sound halfway decent. And that's probably likely what happened. They did that for effect, or they had pros, like, pretend like they were playing with bad tone. But in either case, I've been there. And mm-hmm. so, again, like, I felt that, like, if I had to, like, pass that out to, like, my sixth grade beginners, right, and I passed out that Pixar theme, and it was like, all right, 1, 2, ready, go, and they have no idea what they're doing, that's what it would have sounded like. And that was, I thought that was brilliant.
It seems like, for authenticity, just thinking about it, it seems like they would be better off just giving it to kids instead of having mm-hmm. like professionals try to do it badly, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Because they would end up making it sound too good is the problem.
Yeah. Or they would all, like, overcompensate and make it so bad that it would be like something, you know, I don't know.
Yes.
But I thought that really worked for me and really kind of, like, set the tone for the movie, I thought. Mm-hmm. And I thought it looked amazing. You know, I mean, I don't know, like, full disclosure, I'm not a huge Pixar fan, I have mm-hmm. to say. I've seen more than half of their movies, and I usually think, like, well, that was good, you know? But mm-hmm. there are very few which have, like, blown me away. You know, like, Incredibles, I would say, is probably at the top.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this one, I think, is, I mean, it may be their best. I don't know. It's up there with Incredibles for sure. You know, I mean, and everyone talks about, you know, coming out. I mean, I would see it when I was working at, you know, movie theaters. You'd see people coming out of Pixar movies with, like, you know, tears streaming down their face and everything. Mm-hmm. And I've never actually, like, felt that watching a Pixar movie. But this time I was, like, you know, starting to get a little misty because, you know, the ending really does, you know, pack a punch.
It does.
So yeah, I mean, I think that this is right up there with their best work, you know.
I agree. And definitely for me, the personal connection to it definitely helps, because, like, mm-hmm. again, like, as I said, I've been Mr. G. So I 100% identify with a lot of the things he was going through in that film. But no, it was just well done all around.
Yeah.
Kudos to them.
Yeah, and, you know, I always feel the need to point this out just because whatever, but, you know, it was co-written and co-directed by a guy named Kemp Powers, who, he's done a lot of stuff, like, in a lot of different media, but as far as, like, screen credits are concerned, up mm-hmm. until yesterday, his only other credit was he was on the writing staff of Star Trek Discovery in season one. He wrote the episode Choose Your Pain, which is the episode which introduced the F-bomb to Star Trek. So, you know, he's got a special place in my heart. But, you know, back before he was writing for the screen, he was a playwright as well as, you know, a journalist. I mean, he's done tons and tons of stuff. And, you know, one of his plays was One Night in Miami, which is another movie which came out in theaters on Friday, and it's going to be available on Prime in a couple weeks, I think January 13th. And I was lucky enough to see it as part of, like, a film festival a few months back, and it's even better than Soul.
Wow.
I mean, it's so good. I mean, the premise is, okay, the night that Muhammad Ali won the title.
Which time?
The first time.
Okay.
I think. So after the match, he went back to, I think it was his hotel room, with Malcolm X, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke.
Mm-hmm.
And the four of them just hung out in a hotel room.
That's awesome.
And, like, nobody knows what happens. You know, like, what the play does is it essentially imagines, like, what were these guys talking about? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, four of the most influential people in the world at that time. And it was, like, a time when all of them were at, like, a specific turning point in their lives for one reason or another. And it's just that. I mean, the movie expands on it a bit more. There's some before stuff and some, you know, whatever. But okay. It's essentially just these four guys in a room talking for, you know, like an hour and a half. And it's awesome. You know, it's going to probably get nominated for Best Picture and everything. I mean, this guy could, you know, win Best Original Screenplay for Soul and Adapted Screenplay for One Night in Miami. Like, I was just looking, like,
crazy.
He's got two movies, his first two movies ever come out on the same day, and they're both at 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, it's like, it's insane.
That's impressive.
I don't know. And you know, the only reason why I was, like, following this guy is because he got his start on Star Trek, you know? And
yeah.
It's just so cool. And now he's, like, doing I guess he's going to do, like, an animated movie with Lord and Miller and stuff like that. So okay. It's just, I don't know. It's cool. But definitely check out Soul, and also check out One Night in Miami in a couple weeks when it's released. So
okay, cool. Will do.
So there was another movie that was released on Friday. And there were a lot. I mean, I'm still behind. Like, I haven't seen the new Robert Rodriguez movie, We Can Be Heroes. Like, that,
yeah.
that came out. I haven't watched the new George Clooney movie, Midnight mm-hmm. Sky. You know, I'm behind. But I did see WW84.
I did too.
So yeah, a lot of people have been talking about this. There's a lot of opinions about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, when the first reviews started coming out, the first few that I saw were something along the lines of WW84 is the perfect movie for our time. It is exactly what we needed right now in order to escape reality. And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh no, it's going to suck. But, yeah, it came out and I watched it and you watched it. So what did you think about it?
Yeah, I didn't like it. I thought I was incredibly disappointed because I love the first Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah,
absolutely love it. It's my favorite of the DCEU catalog. I think it's the best thing that they did. I think she's the best thing that has come out of the DCEU. Wonder Woman is, and Gal Gadot's portrayal of her. She was the best part of BVS, which I hate. And so I loved her first film. I was like, I'm like on the Wonder Woman train, wanting this movie to be successful. Couldn't wait for it. You know, been waiting 3 years for this movie. Comes out. And I was super disappointed because the movie is kind of a mess.
Yeah, I agree that the movie is kind of a mess. I would say on the whole, I enjoyed it. You know, I thought like it was a huge step down, but I still thought it was, you know, pretty good. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I dislike it.
Yeah.
I'd still say it's a decent movie, but certainly not nearly as good as the first one.
Oh, nowhere close.
And, you know, towards the middle of the pack of the DCEU movies, I haven't gone through and ranked them. I don't know.
I went ahead and did.
Okay.
It is only, for me, it's only above Justice League and Suicide Squad because everything's better than Suicide Squad, in my opinion.
Okay.
And,
what are your rankings? And I'll do mine real quick too.
Okay, hold on. Let me pull them up. So for my DCEU list, I have Wonder Woman first, then Aquaman, Birds of Prey, Shazam, Man of Steel, BVS, Wonder Woman 84, Justice League, and Suicide Squad.
Okay. So here are my rankings then. I know this will probably cause some controversy, whatever. So number one by far is Birds of Prey.
Okay.
Number two would probably be Man of Steel. Number three would probably be Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
And then number four is Wonder Woman. And then number five, this is where we get into some really weird territory, because like Suicide Squad, while I acknowledge that it's a really bad movie, I think it is very fun to watch.
Okay.
So I would put that at number five, followed by Shazam, which I think is a good movie, but, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. I couldn't really care less about it. Then WW84, Aquaman, and then Justice League would be at number
the bottom.
Nine. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe switch Justice League and Aquaman there. But we've got the new Justice League coming up. Well, apparently, mm-hmm. I don't know. I read somewhere it was March 25th. Okay. I don't know if that's confirmed or whatever, but just 3 months away. So,
yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And as was revealed mere minutes ago from when we were recording this, Wonder Woman 3 is on the way.
Well, I guess it kind of has to be to wash the taste of this one out of our mouth, because it's, yeah, they got to redeem this one. At this point, they need a Wonder Woman Ragnarok to combat the Thor the Dark World that is Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah, now, I mean, with 84, I think the premise is just kind of faulty, right? The idea that the entire thing like hinges on people's wishes, right? Mm-hmm. But then they do some weird stuff with what that means on a, I don't know, philosophical level as well and everything. It's just kind of a mess. And also, I mean, like, those trailers, like, killed. And, you know, you see, like, like 84. Like, you put that right in the title. Like, this movie takes place in 1984, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's on. This is going to be great. And yet it didn't lean into anything that would have made that great, you know?
Yeah.
They did not take advantage of that at all. They
agreed,
treated
it
as just like this foreign land, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's like the way after watching it, this movie didn't need to take place in 1984. It could have been any time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at like Captain Marvel, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that that was set in like the mid 90s, and they had all the music and everything.
Yep.
You know, she crashes into a Blockbuster, like everything. Mm-hmm. It's like all these touchstones. This had none of that. And that
That's
was
correct.
Just. I think while that's not like a, you know, a necessary component, I think that it does speak to like the failing of this movie in general, which is that it wasn't really fun at all.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. I don't know. Some interesting choices. Now I do have to ask here, what did you think about Max Lord in this movie?
I don't necessarily want to say he was kind of a throwaway villain, but it's like, I didn't necessarily understand his motivation. And then like, I didn't understand like what he should have lost. And like, because you would think that like he, you know, spoilers, would have lost his son in return for gaining the power that he got, because mm-hmm. he was like, you should have gotten, you know, lost the one thing that, you know, the trade-off was like, you lose something that's a big part of yourself, to gain your wish. And so he didn't lose his son. So he lost his health. So he valued his health over his son. That didn't make any sense. And then like he got no comeuppance at the end. Neither of the villains did at the end.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, I guess spoilers for Wonder Woman, you know, whatever, but you know, he did get, I guess, redemption. And that seems to be like, I was reading this article today about how that's kind of consistent with what they do with the character in Justice League International when he was first introduced, you know, in the 80s, which is he was like the bad guy, right, to start. And then he basically reformed and, you know, was a good guy from, well, not there on out. He did.
Yeah, because also spoilers for comic books, Wonder Woman snaps his neck like, you know, Superman style.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yes, well, in the comic books.
Okay. My thinking with it more than anything, and as soon as I saw him in the trailer, I was like, oh, please, please. Like, you're setting it up so that there's a Maxwell Lord character in the 80s. Like, there's a next logical step there, right?
Mm-hmm.
To do the thing which everybody should do, or which everybody should want, which would be, like, I don't know, the only movie that I would care about if they did this, a 1980s set Justice League International movie.
Yeah.
Come on, do it in the style of, like, Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, a bunch of, I mean, because you don't need Superman, you don't need Batman, right?
No.
You get Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, mm-hmm. throw in Guy Gardner, what was it, Fire and Ice, is that what their names were? Yeah. I mean,
That's a fun team.
That's it, right there. You have your movie.
And that could have, you know, explained how, you know, Wonder Woman throughout the time still was fighting the good fight, and there were still other people and still the other heroes around.
Yeah, and you they can have her come in like if that. You want, whatever, you know? Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a huge missed opportunity.
This is what they should have announced today instead of Wonder Woman 3. Can you imagine how happy people would be?
That would be, you know what? That would be taking a risk.
It would be. But, oh, well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, Wonder Woman 3, it's happening. Now, one of the interesting things in this press release was, like, a statement by Toby Emmerich, who, like, runs the film department over at Warner Brothers. And he says something along the lines of, we're very happy to conclude the Wonder Woman theatrical trilogy as intended.
Oh, boy.
You know, so for one thing, they're saying part three is the end, right? But another thing they're saying, like, you know, one of the things we were going to talk about this week was a statement from Patty Jenkins in some interview where she was rather critical about this whole Warner Brothers HBO Max deal. And she's always been a huge proponent of seeing movies in theaters. And she said in this interview, like, I don't know if I would come back for Wonder Woman 3 if there wasn't a theatrical model in place.
Hmm.
So she must have, you know, put that somewhere in this contract and said, like, we're going to be in theaters, you know?
All right.
This is going to happen. So.
Okay. But, you know, there may be a theatrical release, but I'm not exactly sure what the, you know, how it's going to go based on the reception of this film. Right. That's going to play a large role into it. Right.
Yeah. And also, like, well, what were the viewing? I mean, because that was the other big piece of this whole, you know, press release, which is like Wonder Woman 1984 is a huge success, you know, and talking about how, according to them, half the people with HBO Max watched it on Friday.
Yeah.
And how there were three times as many people watching stuff on HBO Max on Friday than had been, like, ever in the app's history or whatever. But then also, and this is where I'm confused, they say that it is the most successful opening weekend at the box office in America since the pandemic began. They say it made like $16 million at the box office, which is fine, except they say it's the most successful, and yet Tenet apparently made $20 million when it opened, but it's the same studio. And here's the other thing, Warner Brothers, with both Tenet and Wonder Woman, they haven't officially released their numbers for either.
Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, it seems like it did well at the box office. I mean, and that's with, you know, all of California, New York, Chicago, all gone. So, I mean, I guess that's good. I guess that means it did well at the box office.
I guess, but, you know, it might have done well at the box office, but the reception, the fan reception is when it's divided, it's not helpful.
That's true.
And it's divided at best.
It does seem like there is a lot more, and this doesn't seem to be like a DC versus Marvel thing, which is you know, what you always get. Like, this is, yeah, people really don't like this movie.
Yeah.
But it's not going to stop them from making another one.
That's true, apparently.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, well. So, just one other thing, just because I was looking at it, whatever, just for the sake of whatever, you know, the year's now over. Well, maybe you know this off the top of your head, but what do you think is the number one movie at the box office for the year 2020?
Birds of Prey, right?
No, no. That's what I would have, like, if someone would have told me, like, this is how the year is playing out, what's number one? I would have said Birds of Prey, but no, it's Bad Boys for Life. So there you go.
Oh, I love it.
Anyway, another story that came out, well, another, I guess, press release that came out earlier in the week was from Warner Brothers saying that they're planning on releasing movies in theaters in 2023. And, you know, they did not say that these are coming to HBO Max. They just said in theaters. They set three release dates. On June 23rd, 2023, we're getting Furiosa, the prequel to Mad Max Fury Road, which George Miller is directing, starring Anya Taylor-Joy as Furiosa. And then on July 21st, we're getting Coyote versus Acme, which is a live-action animated hybrid by Dave Green, the guy who did the second of the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies.
Okay.
And we'll get to that in a second. The third one is The Color Purple, which is a musical version of the story, and that's coming out on December 20th, 2023. That one's directed by Blitz Bazabule, who he hasn't done much, but he was one of the directors on Black is King, the Beyonce thing.
Yeah.
So those three movies are coming out supposedly in theaters, but all of these look interesting in one way or another. I mean, Furiosa, obviously. Like, are you a Fury Road fan or a Mad Max fan?
I like Fury Road, so that's definitely interesting.
Yeah, and you know, Anya Taylor-Joy, I think, you know, that seems like pretty good casting. She's kind of all over the place now, but yeah, just George Miller being able to return to that world, and Furiosa to me was like the most, I mean, she was basically the main character in that movie, even though it was a Mad Max movie. And
exactly,
that movie was so good. So yeah, I can't wait for that one. Now, this Coyote versus Acme movie, apparently it's written and produced by James Gunn. So that's kind of
this guy is apparently officially back in the fold, because like now he has all these projects after being in the doghouse for a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was one of those things where as soon as Disney fired him, they were like, oh, we shouldn't have done that. You know, that was a mistake. But, you know, yes, he's definitely back. So, wow, lots and lots of stuff coming from him. And then The Color Purple, that was previously announced, but I forget. There was a Broadway musical
version. Yeah, I've seen it on Broadway.
Okay, so it's basically that. You said you saw it?
Yeah, I've seen it on Broadway.
What did you think?
It was good. I liked it better than the film.
Okay.
I enjoyed it more than I did the film.
Yeah, I read the book, and I saw the movie, and I thought the book was definitely better than the movie. But I'm curious to see what they would do with it as a musical.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like the stage show, if they do essentially what they did with, you know, with other musical adaptations of Broadway shows, then I think it'll be fine, because a lot of the staging that they do is very similar. So, you know, just the sets are a little bit bigger and they could be a little bit more extravagant. But I think it's gonna definitely matter who they cast and who is going to be, you know, what voices are going to be, you know, singing the parts. That's definitely going to matter, especially, you know, for this musical in particular, because it's, you know, it's a Black production, right? And so the sound of it has to match, and it has to work. So I think that's going to play a huge role in its success.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, something to look forward to 3 years from now. So, yeah, and this Wonder Woman 3, it's got to be years and years off, because, I mean, they just announced that Jenkins is doing that Star Wars movie, which comes out in 2023. And then there's the Cleopatra thing, which she's doing with Gal Gadot, which who knows what's going to happen with that, but, you know, whatever. And then Wonder Woman 3. So could be a few years, you know, maybe some time for them to to fix some stuff.
So. Yes.
So MGM is a studio which, you know, has probably been suffering more than most during the pandemic because they don't have a streaming service to throw their stuff on. And, you know, this is, I don't, you know, I guess giving them some financial hardship, and they're looking to sell the studio. Nobody knows who might buy it. It's quite possible and maybe even likely, as I understand it, that it's not going to be like bought up by Disney or something like that, but it would be purchased by like a group of investors who would, you know, whatever. So maybe to the consumer, there wouldn't really be any change that we see, but it could end up at like Apple or Amazon or something like that.
Yeah, the way things are going, I would assume that some company like that is gonna swoop in so that way they can have all the rights to that stuff, so that way it can be exclusively on one of these things that you have to get a subscription for, right?
Because they do have a good back catalog, you know, with Rocky and all of the Bond movies, of course, being their big thing. Yeah, and they've got also one of the things that says, you know, that they're saying what makes them a nice pickup for someone is that they have No Time to Die like in the can, just ready to go, you know? And that movie, it's bounced around, you know, release dates. It was the very first movie to move their release date to get away from the pandemic. Yeah. And then they moved it again. So now it's coming out in April, supposedly. Okay. And the reason why it's not on a streaming service is because they tried selling it to, I think, Apple, and I want to say someone else, and the amount that they were asking for was like $300 million or something like that for like I forget, it was like a 6-month run or something. Like, they wouldn't even own it. And Amazon and Apple or whoever it was were just like, you know, no, that's too expensive. You know,
we can't
do that, you know? So, who knows? Who knows what it means? Maybe it means nothing, but, you know, it could mean something.
Yeah. We'll see. But I'm sure at some point we're going to hear about, like, either some new streaming service or one that's already existing that people either have already or were thinking about getting. One of those that needs to be competitive will swoop in at some point and make a desperate play.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like Apple would be a likely target, you know? Mm-hmm. They haven't really had much, all things considered. It feels like they kind of botched that, but
exactly. Yeah. And so you kind of have to look for whatever streaming service that does not have a huge draw of some kind.
Mm-hmm. We shall see. Okay. So did you see the Halloween sequel that came out a couple of years ago? Halloween. They just called it Halloween.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. That was produced by Blumhouse, Jason Blum, and directed by David Gordon Green. Kind of an interesting fit, but what did you think about that?
I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah, I liked it too. It was kind of interesting how they basically skipped over all the sequels and made this like Halloween 2 again, which is the second time that they've done that now.
Yes,
because there was Halloween H2O back in the day. Yeah. Obviously it did really well, and they've got a second one which has already been shot and is ready to go for next October, and a third one to follow the year after that. But Blum and Green, you know, I guess they found their thing, you know, and now they're going to do essentially the same thing that they did with Halloween, but now with The Exorcist.
Okay.
Are you an Exorcist fan?
Not really. And it's not because, like, I didn't like the movies of The Exorcist that I've seen, because I like the couple that I've seen, like, I liked, but it wasn't my cup of tea. So it's not like something I'm going to go out of my way to be like to watch multiple times. It's more like, you know, it's Halloween, let's watch a fun, scary movie type of deal for me.
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way. You know, when they did Exorcist, the version you've never seen, you know, and they released it in theaters, everyone was going crazy over this thing. And I'm like, I guess I should finally see The Exorcist. But people were like, it's so scary. Like, you don't want to, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, you know, it was Halloween. And I went to the Fine Arts Theater, which in itself is a terrifying experience downtown Chicago. It no longer exists. But I'm like, this will be an ideal situation. But at the same time, I was like, am I going to be too scared to watch this movie? And like, I don't get scared by movies, but like just this, I don't know. It was built up so much. And then I watched it and I was kind of like, that's it. Like, this isn't, yeah. I can't, you know, I mean, like, stuff that I find scary is, like, Silence of the Lambs or something like that, where it's like, this is a real thing. Like, there could be, you know, people out there who want to, you know, eat you or remove your skin to make a person suit or whatever, you know? But, like, you say, like, oh, Exorcist. I mean, it really feels to me like watching, like, freaking Harry Potter, where, like, they're yelling at each other and pointing their wands until one of them does something magically to whatever, you know, like, I'm sorry, I can't care less about that, you know, and like this, it's like, you know, there's a girl on a bed who's getting like water, you know, tossed on her and they're like chanting and everything. And then eventually it works or whatever. It's like, I'm sorry, this is boring. This is just whatever. I mean, it's a well-made movie. It's good, whatever. You know, but now we're getting more of them. So, that's cool.
Cool.
I don't know. I would. Did you ever see like they did like a whole like Richard Donner cut sort of thing for that prequel?
I didn't see it, but I remember. I remember thinking that I wanted to see it, and I think I was just like, I think I'll go see that, but then I just never did.
Right. Right. They hired Paul Schrader to do a prequel. They saw it. They were like, oh, no, 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 no. So then they brought in Rennie Harlan, the director of Deep Blue Sea and Die Hard 2, to come in and remake it or whatever. Essentially, they reshot a ton of stuff.
I like those two films.
Those are great, right? but, you know, the version that they released was terrible. So then, like a year later, they let Schrader go back and redo it, and then they essentially released it in like art houses. And it was, from what I understand, I never saw his version, but they say it was still bad, but it was way better than what they had originally released. Okay. But I don't know. I mean, it seems like this is kind of another situation where, like, aside from Exorcist 3, like, people really don't like everything that has come after the original. So now this is their chance to do something new. I don't know. I mean, are they going to erase all the sequels? Who knows?
I don't know.
There's also that TV show, which was on a few years back, which apparently was good, and which when it started, they were like, oh, look, they're remaking The Exorcist. And then like, as you're watching it, like you kind of like get this slow reveal, like, no, it's not a remake. It's a sequel, you know, which is kind of cool. But I imagine that they would ignore that, too. I mean, who knows? Who knows what they're going to do with it? But, you know, I can definitely see how this would be appealing to a studio like Warner Brothers or whatever, who sees what this team did with Halloween and then says, okay, do that for us with The Exorcist, you know, another big 70s horror classic. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, another movie, which I'm sure will be as good as the hype. So, finally, we have some more information about this Book of Boba Fett. You know, I mean, the episode had just aired when we recorded last week, and then the following day, they released did a press release with all the info, you know, that we were looking for. Sure enough, it is going to be its own thing. It's not going to be season 3 of Mandalorian.
Cool.
And as we suspected or knew, you know, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau are back as producers.
Thank God.
Yes, and Ming-Na Wen is in fact coming back, you know, which, I mean, was implied by that scene, you know, but it sounds like she's going to be, you know, a regular on the show.
Yeah.
And the big surprise, which just made me so happy, Robert Rodriguez is also coming back as an executive producer.
That is super dope.
You know, he directed the episode where Boba Fett is introduced, you know, where they have their the tragedy, I believe, was the name of the episode.
Yeah.
And his action in that was one of the things which made it so great. You know, like there was some interview where he was talking about how he saw his job as making Boba Fett as cool as everyone thought he was back in the day when he didn't do anything except stand around.
Yeah, that's the I think that's the biggest takeaway. It's like, make him as cool as you thought he was, which is something that, like, I've had to do, like, you know, like, when reading certain things, it's like, this is the show that I thought I was watching. Like, if they're making, like, if there's a comic book of something that's, you know, good examples, like the Power Ranger comics. Like, that is the show that I thought I was watching when I was a little kid. Because if you go back right now, like right now, and watch that show, you're just like, well, this is garbage. You know, like you see, like you read the comic book, it's like, oh, this is what I thought I was watching. Right. And so, you know, with Robert Rodriguez and his direction on that and how he, you know, basically did make Boba Fett as cool as we thought he was. And like, he was actually doing stuff in the episode that he directed, whereas in the movies, he didn't do anything.
He definitely did not. Yeah. But yeah, I, you know, even take that away, like even if Rodriguez hadn't directed that episode, which is probably the best episode of the show so far, like his track record is just phenomenal. I mean,
he has the chops.
From Dusk Till Dawn, that's like one of the best movies ever made. And the action in that is amazing. And then you look at like Desperado and all that stuff.
I love Desperado.
Yeah. And in recent years, you know, I mean, he's become sort of a joke. You know, people are like, oh, Robert Rodriguez, look at what he's doing. You know, he's just likes to do things on the cheap and everything. And, you know, you look at like Shorts or Machete, you know, which
I love Machete.
I love Machete. Yeah. But I can see what people are saying. Like he basically got filmmaking to a point where he could do everything himself. And then by doing that, he lacked like the input of like valuable collaborators, like cinematographers and stuff like that, who could refine it so that he could, you know, make it even better. But with Alita, I feel like there was a real shift there. I mean, what, did you see Alita?
I did.
What'd you think?
I liked it.
Yeah, me too. I liked it. It was awesome.
And the thing, here's the thing, like what you're saying, because what you're saying about him is correct, but I think, you know, that kind of shows the bias, I guess, towards him in the industry, because if this was another person that did what he did, right, like, and took the path that he did, and that had a little bit, I guess, more cachet, or was a bit more fan-friendly, or if he had his own little, like, you know, if he had his own fandom, basically, like if this were Nolan, right, all the Nolanites would think that it's the greatest thing ever. And they would be shouting his name from every single rooftop that they could. Right. Yeah. But since it's Robert Rodriguez and he doesn't have that same cachet, they look down upon it when it's just like, no, he's just doing his own way.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And he, you know, he does things like, you know, he likes making kids movies, for example. He had a new kids movie come out this week. And
there's no shame in that.
Right. And that's not what fanboys necessarily are looking for, but that doesn't mean that they're not good, you know?
Yeah.
Like the Spy Kids movies, those are really good, you know? So I'm super excited about this. I really am. And not to mention the fact that he has done, you know, a lot of stuff in TV. He did that From Dusk Till Dawn TV show, which... I've only seen a couple of episodes of it. I don't know why. I think it's just because there's too much stuff to watch, right?
Yes.
But like he directed like a lot of those himself, you know, and wrote a lot of them himself too and everything. And it's really good and like a really interesting take on the material, like him adapting himself. It's fascinating. So he knows how to do all that stuff.
Yep.
And to just say like, yeah, we want you to come in and do this to make Boba Fett cool, you know? Great. I'm on board. Yeah. I can't wait. And apparently this thing has already been shooting and everything like that. So, you know, they say it's coming out December of 2021. Yeah, just can't get here soon enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, so I guess that's pretty much it for the week. You know, just two other things, if you don't mind me just mentioning a couple other things that I saw that are related. Now, after watching WW 84 and being fairly unsatisfied by it, I ended up watching Crisis on Earth X.
Okay.
And I thought it was really good. I don't know. What's the general reaction to that?
Crisis on Earth X?
Yeah.
Oh, people love Crisis on Earth X. I love Crisis on Earth X, except for the ending.
Where but they don't get worry. Married? Or?
Yeah, we will get there on my pod, on okay. Always Hold On the Arrow, because we have gripes.
Okay,
but,
all right.
But no, that crossover is one of the best things that they did, and I think that was probably the peak of the crossovers in the Arrowverse. I think they reached their apex there.
I mean, that's what I was kind of thinking. Like, as I was watching this, I'm like, you know, why am I more satisfied by this crossover from these four shows, which I'm usually just kind of making fun of, and, you know, compared to the $200 million.
Listeners, you know, you don't see this. My hands are up because this has been this is what I've been saying about DC in film for years now. I was just like, especially like when they were happening in the moment, because when that came out, we had already had Man of Steel, we'd already had BVS, Suicide Squad, and I think Justice League at that point, right?
Yeah,
and
I think so, it would have been right around that time.
So we'd already had those things. And I'm just
they probably came out the same month, actually. That was same month as Justice League.
Yeah, and I'm just like, how is it that the CW did this better than these big multi-million dollar budget movie studios? How is it that they understand this way better than the studios do? Yeah. I don't get it, because I will take what I got on the small screen over what I've gotten on the big screen.
Yeah.
And as far as DC is concerned, every single time at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but I did
to this point, yes.
Up to this point here, yeah, I still wouldn't go that far, but I did think that this was extremely well done, and I don't know, it might be my favorite thing from the Arrowverse so far.
The crossovers were a game changer.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, and for a lot of people, it's what kept people watching the shows. Mm-hmm. is because of not only the big crossover, but there were still like little small crossovers that happened every now and then.
Yeah,
and so
you never know when they're going to show up, and you're just exactly. Like, hey, you know, yeah, it's fun. Yeah, the other thing that I saw, just speaking of like Blumhouse remakes or whatever, last year they remade Black Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see this?
I recently saw it. I recently watched it because I was looking. I've been watching, you know, all these different Christmas movies.
Yeah, me too.
You know, this holiday season.
Yeah.
And you know, some I've rewatched and revisited for the first time in a long time. Especially due to, you know, the shout out to the Talk Film Society, that stuff. You know, I've been rewatching those. I did rewatch Black Christmas this holiday season.
The original or the new one?
The new one.
The new one. Yeah, I had never, I didn't see it when it came out, because it came and went like right away. No one saw it. And the reviews were really bad at the time. Mm. You know, and it was one of those movies where it always looked intriguing to me, but whatever. And, you know, I saw some tweet from someone who was like, Black Christmas is a good movie. There's a lot of men who don't like that, but they should probably, you know, look at why they don't like it, and that might be a little telling or something like that. And I'm like, that's an interesting take. Let's check this out. And I was really, really impressed by this thing. Mm-hmm. I can understand, like, if you're a Black Christmas purist, you know,
yeah,
and you're like, oh God, they really do. I mean, the adaptation is not, I mean, it's a great adaptation in that they're not doing the original movie again. They're taking all of the elements from the original movie and remixing them into something else, which I just watched the original for the first time 2 days before I watched this one. And I have to say, this is a much better version of that story.
I agree.
They do some stuff at the end with some supernatural elements where you're like, I don't know if that really works tremendously well. But if it were anything else, like if it were, you know, something where that had already existed in the first one, you'd just be like, okay, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just the expectation, which is a little skewed, you know?
Yeah. No, I got you.
But I thought the movie was great.
I thought it was fine. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And also, like, mostly, like, I'm a big Imogen Poots fan.
Yeah.
So I think she's a great, great actress. So, so I enjoyed that one. And, you know, like, it kind of, in a lot of ways, kind of reminded, it had gave me a Happy Death Day vibes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I really like both of those movies. Those movies, I really love awesome. Those.
Yeah,
So that's kind of what, I think that's kind of what really made me like it, because it kind of reminded me of that. So, yeah. No problems with Black Christmas for me.
Yeah, I did feel like, and I think this is another reason why I didn't see it at the time, is they did talk about how the movie was really, like, chopped up by the studio, and, like, originally it was a hard R, and they cut it down to get a PG-13 and stuff. And you really can feel that in the movie. Like,
yeah,
there's something missing here. So, you know, they need to do, I mean,
they'd have a trending hashtag. Yeah. To release a cut.
Screw Justice League. Let's get, you know, the director's cut of Black Christmas, you know, but that movie is on HBO Max right now. If you're looking for something to watch on HBO Max, I would recommend Black Christmas.
Yeah.
And not necessarily WW84, but, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Whatever. All right. You got anything else that you saw that you're, you know, want to recommend?
No. I mean, I can't recommend Soul enough.
There you go. I agree. Soul is great. So, yeah, definitely check that out. Plenty of stuff to watch, even if some of that stuff was disappointing. You know, there's it's not the end of movies. There's lots and lots and lots of options.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Lance, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias, and you can find me on the United Federation of Podcasts, talking about all the things that make Arrow Arrow on Always Hold On to Arrow. You can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. And you can also find me on my website, where we do a show called Film Damage, where we talk about film projection and Star Trek and time travel. You can also find me and Lance on Talk Film Society, finishing up our TFS The Season podcast, where we do double features of Christmas movies. So check that out on talkfilmsociety.com. All right. I still don't have a catchphrase. I don't know what to say at the end of the episode. What's like the Daily Planet's slogan? What's that? Does that work? It's got to be something, right?
That's a good question.
Well, we'll look.
Sure.
We'll look.
I'll have to look
that
up. Yeah. I'll look that up.
But until then, I guess Happy New Year, because when we come back. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be in 2021 when we come back. That is crazy.
But in a good way, I think.
Yes, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
All right. Well, until then, happy holidays.
Happy New Year, y'all.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.